Welcome to Botches Off-Road. Join us as we talk about everything from gear reviews to trail stories, tent camping to rock landing, and all things to do with the outdoors. This episode, we're going to try another... You're getting two new segments this week. We're going to try doing something a little different and read off some radio chatter cards and kind of, you know, answer them and play the game a little bit. Yeah. Definitely forgot our radio chatter deck somewhere, so we're only going to have one card today.
Well, which is perfect. Perfect.
It's going to be the one that they advertise on their website, and I'll link the radio chatter website in the show notes, because this is a game that it's good to just have it in your glove box. It doubles as a deck of cards, so if you want to play normal cards, it's there. And there's some really fun questions, and it's worth reading them out. So,
yeah, and they even have a radio chatter after dark game, which is not safe for kids, or not safe for radios, NSFR, as they say.
I definitely own that deck, and that deck will definitely be mixed in when we're reading our cards.
Oh yeah, so
that'll be a lot of fun. The next time you hear radio chatter from us, it might be dirty.
Yeah, right. So it'll be nice for a little mini-sode today. And the conversation starter for the radio chatter, as they have up on their website, the question is, what is your favorite upgrade on your rig? And I think that's a pretty good one. Why don't we start with you, Mark? What's your favorite? I know you just got a new one, so I wonder if that changes anything now.
I kind of debated about it, thinking about it. I'm like, does it really, is my new favorite one? No. I think my favorite one, and this is the second time now, but this time is better than the first time, is how I have my comms and speaker laid out for my truck.
Very efficient, if you've ever seen it. Maybe, Mark, you could take a picture of your cab area at some point.
Yeah, I got
that for chapter.
Yeah, I got a couple pictures. I think I can get them off my phone. So, but this last time, instead of having my main unit mounted in the back behind my seat, even though last time we did it was temporary and we just threw it back there. But I got that set up that way. It's in my glove box, or actually not the glove box, but the center console. I plumbed the mic cord into a little mic plug-in where my outlet used to be for my cigarette lighter.
Using Cat 5.
Yes, Cat 5 cable.
We ran a Cat 5 cable from the center console to the dash that goes through a pass-through that makes it so he can plug his mic in on the dash.
Yep. And then ran speaker up over into above my sunglass holders and put a speaker there because it was a good area for me to position it, and it looks clean being centered. And then beyond that, I got some off-roam phone mounts, one's for my phone with now Zoom mostly more than the phone now. But and then the other one is strictly for my mic holder, and I got this cool magnetic mic mount. And it's quite awesome just to throw it up there. As long as it's within range of that magnet, it'll grab the magnet and stay up.
Yeah, your magnet holder for your mic, I'm going to have to copy that because that is the slickest thing, dude.
It is.
And it just holds it so... It's easy to grab. It holds it tight. It's rock solid.
Hey, I'm muted.
Yeah, okay. Damn. So do I leave the like 10 seconds of silence in or not?
I was what I was gonna say was that I actually thought about that too while we were doing our poker run. I would reach with my left hand to go put the mic back on my, you know, my A pillar where I have it mounted at, and I would literally just drop it on the ground because I'm not looking at the same time. So right. There was a couple of times where I dropped it on the floor. I'm like, ah, shit, and you know, picked it up. But yeah, the magnetic, that's pretty interesting. I might have to think about something like that too. Or maybe I'll look at a cheaper version and looking at like the magnets we sell at our hardware store, like neodymium magnets or something cheaper like that, and just see what I can find.
I will say,
we could totally build one.
Yeah.
I think I could drill
when I bought it.
Yeah. I wonder if I could drill like a hole into my A pillar, seat a magnet into it, glue it in, and then just glue, you know, obviously take the mount off the back of my handset and just glue a magnet onto that. And I wonder if that would
work. You might even be able to just dig some of the plastic out of the back of your A pillar so that the magnet doesn't even show through. It's just clean A pillar.
Yeah. I mean, so what a lot of people do with the FJ stuff is they actually put magnets on the other side of the plastic.
Yep.
And they just glue them to the other side of the plastic with hot glue or whatever. And then they put them, you know, they have a tablet mount like that where they, Alex, you've seen how my radio is set up, how the tablet area is. Well, they literally have the regular radio, the stock radio there, but they have magnets on the other side of that plastic. And they can literally put their 11-inch tablet and just pop it right there. So it's actually pretty cool.
So, Gavin, we're going to go to you. What is your favorite mod you've done to your truck?
Mine did change. I think originally, it was the fridge. It was just so much nicer to have something like that. But I think as of late, a couple weeks ago, I installed a switch panel, much like the aux beam H, or like the 8 button switch panels. I think I got like a 12 button cheapo one from Amazon, and I installed that. Definitely have never done anything like that before, but that is by far so far my favorite. It's so much easier where my lighting is all in one area. Before, I had switches underneath my dash. I'd have to reach for them. I'd have to feel for which one was what because I didn't know. I had a button and a switch. And then the amount of wiring I actually had going to my battery, which Alex can confirm, it was crazy for all the lights that I had and everything. You know, I only have two chasers, but you know, the wiring harnesses together plus two fog lights. I think having that on, being able to minimize all that wiring was like awesome. And then of course you could program that switch panel on the go so that you could change it so that your lights flash if you're in an emergency situation, or let's say Alex and I are doing a recovery at 3 a.m. and we want people to see us in the middle of a snowstorm. I can make those lights flash so that people actually understand, hey, we're on the trail, slow down, you know, whatever. So that is super nice. I could turn the lights on and off. I could change the color of the LCD on the panel. It makes it, under the hood is much cleaned up from wiring. And it also makes wiring new lights much, much, much easier because now I just have to run the positive and negative straight to that panel and then assign a fucking button to it. And that's it. So it's great. And that is probably my favorite so far.
Yeah, that's a good one. I actually, when I did my battery relocation, I put just a relay box in there. I think it's got 10 relays, and then I just have to wire my switch to the relay and then the relay to the light. But it's all in one spot, easy to get to.
Yeah.
Like just having that universal location for power is so nice.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think eventually I'll hook up like power. So like my fridge right now, it can be charged off of like an cigarette lighter. So eventually when I wire that new cigarette lighter into the side of my or plug or whatever I decide to do into the side of my FJ, where I'm going to plug my fridge into, I'm going to wire that power to that panel so that I can turn that on and off so that it doesn't continually charge my fridge while I'm, parked. But if I need to, I can keep it on and charge while my ignition's off and everything. So to be able to have that, to be able to have that choice is what I want. So what about you, Alex? What's your favorite? Is it still your, I think we talked about this once way back in the beginning in our first season.
So for a long time, my favorite was my quick deflators.
Yep.
Because I think our first episode is when we talked about this.
Probably.
Or our first couple. Yeah. But yeah, my quick deflators were my favorite for a really, really long time. Because when it, you know, you get to the spot, you're aired down, ready to go, and ready to just go bullshit with people in, you know, 30 seconds or less. And no one else airs down as fast as I do. So I get aired down and I've got 5-10 minutes to sit and bullshit with people. My favorite is probably my pack outs. The pack out mounts themselves. I won't even say the boxes. The boxes are really nice, but what's nice about it is that I can just lock them into a pack out mount and never have to worry about strapping them down, tying anything down. It's just click in, they're locked, they're going to stay put. And that is a huge benefit.
Mm-hmm. And specifically the ones you and me have, they're metal, not just the plastic ones you have to modify mount.
I'm sure the plastic ones we would have broken by now, but the metal ones are rock solid.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's a really good upgrade and a really good pick. I was wondering if it was going to be the same as what you were saying last, which was the deflators.
Yeah. I mean, I love my deflators. Don't get me wrong. They're probably my second favorite one.
So I actually have a question that I just was thinking about randomly. And for time's sake, I'm going to ask it anyway.
What's that?
It's a little off topic, but what's your guys' favorite state forest campground in Michigan?
Okay, this is good to sound. You've been to a couple because we went to the one up by the Porcupine Mountains too.
Oh, wait.
State Forest Campground?
Yeah, like Tin Cup. Or the Little Loop. Like
actual campground or like favorite state forest?
I'm thinking campground, honestly. There's so many in Michigan, and there's one in Newaygo. Which I'm sure Mark's been to, right?
My
favorite state campground is Hungerford Lake. Or Pigeon River. Either Hungerford Lake or Pigeon River. We do a lot of, my family does horses, so we've done a lot of horse camping. So that's hard. So Hungerford is really great because it's close and beautiful. But Pigeon River, you get to ride horses with elk. So, honestly, I'd say Pigeon River is my favorite state forest campground. But my favorite campground in the state has to be Debardee up in Chase, Michigan. That's not just because my grandpa owns it and my family runs it. It's because it's the best campground in the state.
I would say for me... I can't remember any of the ones that I've been to in the UP. I've been to a few of them in the UP, but, I will say the one that comes to mind right now is the Leelanau State Park. That's all the way on the very tip of Leelanau, Peninsula in Michigan. And it was gorgeous, man. There were cedar tree campgrounds that were just cedar trees. And then you have all the fine needles on the ground right up against the lake. It was absolutely gorgeous. It wasn't super overcrowded. They had a beautiful little lighthouse and a little gift shop even in that same park. And it was just gorgeous. It was such a fun place to take my son.
Yeah, I have not been there, but we should do a botches weekend trip up there one of these.
Yeah, this summer. Yeah, just a fun one just to go up to Leelanau and just camp maybe.
Not really any wheeling, just camping.
Yeah, that would be fun, honestly. Just take the families up to state park and do three campsites. And
mm-hmm.
it's only like $20 a night. So it's like, it's not like a crazy amount.
Do we even need three campsites? A lot of state campgrounds will let you have two tents on a site.
Yeah, it'll be like two tents or vehicles, but I just said three just for gear and kids and everything, just to have it, kind of have it a little separated. But
if we could just do two, man, that would save us a boatload of money, like $20 a night.
Oh, yeah, I'm down. I mean, when I went, they gave me one of the host's campsite because they had no campsites left. And I'm like, we just got here and my kid is not happy. And the lady was nice enough to give me the host campsite because there was no host at that time. So, I mean, I've had nothing but good to say about that place. The bathrooms were really very clean. They smelled very good. They didn't smell like a bunch of crap. They had massive
showers.
No, but there was a lake. So,
oh, well, you know, beating off in a lake is a lot less, a lot more frowned upon than beating off in a shower.
There's a lot of lake, buddy. And I don't know if the sunset that we saw, maybe I'll give you some clip art of my wife playing with my son and the sunset behind her, but, or for chapter art, but the views were pretty great. So, not the worst place to beat off, to be honest. Not that we're beating off in state parks or anything.
We do not condone beating off in public.
No, no, we don't. But I'm just saying, if it was to happen and you're that kind of person, which we are not, but if you were, it's a beautiful area to do it. Just like a Two-Hearted campground area up there. Like, we wouldn't condone you beating off on the suspension bridge, but it would be a hell of a place to put on in your notebook or your diary of favorite beat off locations. That's all I have to say.
Your sock drawer.
Yeah. Not my favorite beat off location, but 1 out of 10 wasn't easy to get into.
Oh. On topic on forest campgrounds.
Speaking of, Mark, what's your favorite?
I've only been to two. I think my favorite one so far has been the Carryville State Forest Campground that's part of the Manistee Loop.
Is that, I actually have
that's the one
that
we stayed at for Labor Day, 2 years ago?
Yep.
That's a great campground.
That is a good campground. And lots, you can literally drive right on the trail right at the campground site.
So many side-by-sides, and they like to hit forerunners.
Well, specifically on Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, specifically Labor Day weekend, and specifically my forerunner that was in the back of the group for whatever reason.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Maybe we'll have to check that out. I really love scouting out these areas, and I'd like to do more weekends where we can just go out for a weekend, do a real low budget, not crazy wheeling, even maybe just do a camp. And
yeah,
I think we got to just try to get out more this next summer. Remember, we're halfway dead. We only have 30 more years, give or take, depending on our eating.
You're planning on dying at 60?
I was planning on dying at 20. I'm surprised I made it this far. I just hit 30 and I'm like, now what?
I definitely have like another 50 years because I'm going to die at 80 in space. So I've got at least 50 years left over.
Sure. You know, let me say usable years. That's my biggest thing. And not to jump down this topic too much, but like, I was talking to a guy who I was working with. He's like, I can't wait to, he just bought a brand new Colorado. So it's like a 2019 with 7,400 miles. The first owner died and just never drove it. And he's like, I can't wait to build this thing up a little bit and just take it around the country touring. You know, he's not overlanding or anything, I don't think, but just tour around the country and live in the back of this. And I'm like, dude, you're like almost 70. Why are you waiting so long? Why? It's like the earlier generations wait till they're almost too broken to do it. And
I don't know, man.
And then
my grandpa's in his late 70s and he runs a campground and gets on a horse every day.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it just depends. But to me, I hear people talk like that. And I'm like, why would you wait till you retire? Like, yeah, you have so much. I mean, let's say you retire at 60 or 65. You had probably 20 to 40, 50 good years there where you could have been out doing stuff and living life and making other types of memories. Instead, you're like, nope, got to keep it to the man and got to keep working, working and working until I get my nice pension. And it's like, I think that was a thought that was instilled on our fathers and grandfathers. But that was also in a different time where the country cared about you a little bit more than it does now.
Oh yeah.
In my opinion. Oh, yeah. And corporations cared about you. Right. The living wage is different. Corporations
never cared about you?
No. Smaller ones, you know, I think.
We just had this conversation about the Radium Girls.
Yes, right. Yeah, unfortunately. The fact that there are people that don't even know about that is crazy. But if you've never heard of the Radium Girls, please read it up. It's a very sad story, but it's a lesson. It's a lesson that was needed to be taught and learned. Unfortunately, but
sadly, you know, being radioactive does not give you superpowers.
No, not by what they were, not by radium. No, but back then they were using radium for everything. Is your baby fussy? Here's a radium, tincture. So it was being mass marketed as being something healthy. Like so many other things in life, like, the food pyramid. Or lead makeup, the food pyramid that was lied to us for so fucking long.
The food pyramid was definitely made to make us buy grains.
That is crazy. I found that out recently, and I know this is a mini-sode, so we're not going too crazy about this conspiracy shit.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we were lied to by our own fucking like government and facilities that we needed to buy more grain. How can you trust a fucking word that they say?
And the grain wasn't even the big one. It was the sugars.
What about this? What about the milk ads?
I was about to say milk. Are you fucking up there too?
Crazy?
Hold up. Milk is actually extremely important for the human body. However, pasteurized milk is not. After you boil that milk, you kill all the benefits. As much as they're harping now telling us not to buy raw milk, don't buy raw milk. Oh, raw milk is by far the best thing for you.
It is the best gives you, if you're going to drink it. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, because what raw milk gives you is, well, one, vitamins. Two, it gives you, it's a way to boost your immune system because it exposes you to little bits of a virus, which then gives your body ways to fight it off. Up until we started pasteurizing milk in, what was it, the 70s we started pasteurizing milk? I don't even fully know. But anyways, whenever we started pasteurizing milk, up to that point, we actually used milk as a way to increase the immune system of humans.
Yeah, which, so if you don't know this, it's much like honey. Bees that produce honey in their area, it's always recommended that you eat honey from those bees in your local area because they make antibodies in their honey, which help you from getting sick. So it's kind of like the same thing with mothers and their babies. Mothers a lot of the times will produce antibodies that actually go through their breast milk. And during their time, if there's flu going around or any other kind of sickness going around, their body automatically adjusts to what the baby's going to need and provides antibodies to help the baby survive that. And it's the same thing with cows. So that's where that comes from, is that it's their bodies adjusting to their local area and providing those antibodies to these kids and, you know, parents and all that. So
that's an important point to make, is that raw milk from your local area is what's good for you, not just raw milk in general.
Right. And of course, and this is another thing, I guess, we're not saying that you should just go out and buy raw milk from the first person that you find either. If you do, do your research, buy it from someone who's reputable, who's clean, because a lot of the issues that happen with raw milk are because it's either has some kind of, I can't remember the illness or the what is the reason why they started doing it. Can't remember what it's called, although I should. People will make fun of me.
Pasteurization is another one. Pasteurization is definitely one of those scams that the milk industry pushed the government to make it illegal or make it requirement to pasteurize, because the cost of the equipment to properly pasteurize milk is so high that they pushed out local dairies. That's how we ended up with big dairy problems, is that they use pasteurization as a way to kill off local dairies.
And it did very well. My grandparents had a dairy farm that was eventually pushed out. They were one of the biggest, I think, what was it, Prairie Farms? Is that one of the milk suppliers?
Yeah.
They did a lot of milk for those guys. So, it sucks, but it's important stuff. But we digress out of this, all this conspiracy stuff, right? out of the milk conspiracy, the bread and the wheat conspiracies. There was, a red meat conspiracy for the longest time, not to eat red meat, and your doctors were telling you not to. And now
it's great for you.
And now it's got almost the reverse effect. It's supposed to help. And if you eat that almost by yourself, it's supposed to help. And there's been plenty of people who have done this carnivore diet that you've been hearing around that have just swear up and down that they feel so much better. And I don't know. You look at what we were doing back when we were native to the wild and, 10,000 years ago, what was our diet consisting of? It makes way more sense that we're eating 80% meat and very few nuts and grains and, and maybe it makes more sense for us to be changing that throughout the year. So maybe we should be eating more meat in the summers and maybe eating more fruits and dried meats in the winters. And, it just depends.
I'd flip that around. You'd be eating more meats in the winters and more fruits and veggies and stuff in the summer.
Because it's there, right? So, that makes more sense. That's kind of what I was trying to say, and it got backwards. But
And it's really good for you to eat local produce in the proper season. So, that means you can't just make a fucking taco on a Tuesday night in the wintertime, but it's a really big deal for you to be eating those tomatoes and stuff in the right season, because it also helps you prepare yourself for that season.
Yeah. Fun fact, tomatoes aren't actually ripe when you get them in the grocery store in the middle of winter. They are ripened via gas during transport that actually changes the color of the tomato from green to red. So everything you know is a lie. The government lies to you. And what you need to do is grow your own food. Not listen to the government, stop paying taxes,
but listen to Botch's Off-Road Podcast
for your weekly and very frequent conspiracy ideas, apparently.
And I was gonna say,
start homesteading.
Botch's conspiracies.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's flashlights at my door. And on that note,
catch you guys later.
Racking the slide on my handgun. We'll talk to you later.
Later.